Hello, Disney fans, and welcome to the show. My name is Austin Terrace, and I'm joined here today by my two wonderful sisters, Kylie.
Hey, everybody.
And Emma.
Hi, everyone.
Coming up on this episode of Disney Daydream, park hopping is returning to Disney World in January, concept art has been released for room cabins inside the Galactic Star Cruiser, and the Castle of Magical Dreams is now open at Hong Kong Disneyland. Later on, we'll continue our deluxe resort series by giving you a complete overview of the Grand Floridian Resort. So, take a little break in your busy day, and let's start daydreaming. First of all, a big welcome back to Kylie. We're glad to have you back on the podcast.
So
yay. I'm sure everybody missed you dearly. And yeah, good to know you're healthy and back here.
Yes.
So follow us on Instagram at Diz Daydream. Like our Facebook page, Disney Daydream Podcast. You can email us at disdaydream@gmail.com and make sure that you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And if you would, take the 1 minute or less that it takes to leave us a rating and review. That helps other people to discover our podcast. If you want to be a Disney Daydream superfan and make a financial donation to support our content, you can do so at patreon.com/disneydaydream. Our show is sponsored by our wonderful patrons and by Daydream Travel Agency. Your experts at planning the perfect trip to Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, Adventures by Disney, or Aulani. Check out daydreamtravelagency.com for more information, to request a quote, or to utilize any of our completely free vacation planning services. Hopping right into our news topics for today. Up first, park hopping is returning to Walt Disney World in January after a long hiatus. Guests will still need to secure a park pass reservation for their first park of the day, but they'll be able to hop to any other theme park that hasn't reached capacity starting at 2 p.m. each day. Disney has said that the return of park hopping will not increase theme park capacity, which recently rose to 35% after staying at 25% for more than 3 months. You will not have to make a park pass reservation for the second park you choose, but make sure to check the My Disney Experience app so you know which parks are at capacity and which parks are still admitting guests. You do not want to pay the extra money for a park hopper ticket, leave Magic Kingdom early, just for example, take the 30-minute bus ride to Animal Kingdom, only to find out that the park has reached capacity and you can't get in. At first, that kind of confused me a little bit. Like, I was wondering why you wouldn't need to make a reservation for each park you plan on visiting during the day. But I kind of realized my hypothesis is that if you do that, it makes the theme parks appear to be much busier than they actually are, and it can kind of clog up the park pass reservation system. Also, it seems like all these vloggers that have annual passes and do the park hoppers all the time really value flexibility. They kind of go with the flow and just like middle of the day, like, oh, I want to hop on this attraction or eat at this place, and they go to the other park. So that keeps that flexibility for them in place. And when you add like more reservations into the mix, forcing them to make those extra reservations when they might change their plans and not end up using that park hopper, that just took up more space in the reservation system and might exclude certain guests from being in the park. So I think that's probably the reason behind that choice. But are you guys excited for that return of park hopping?
I am, not because we park hop per se, but just because I feel like this is a step in the direction of getting Disney back to normal. Seeing them introduce some of these old things that were taken away for a little bit gives me a little bit of hope that when we take our trip, hopefully this summer, it'll be somewhat of a normal Disney experience. We'll see what else they bring back in the coming months, but that gives me a little bit of hope.
Yeah, I agree. And for the exact same reason, it's just one little step back towards normalcy. And anything like that is a good thing. So I'm happy that we're seeing that. Maybe we'll continue to see more of the resorts open back up.
Maybe the entertainment will come back.
Nighttime shows.
Yeah, well, they have, and this is like breaking news, like not included in our technical news stories for today, but they have been testing the fireworks at Magic Kingdom.
I heard that yesterday.
So they might be vamping up towards some type of a nighttime spectacular returning. So just maybe thinking, that's going to come back.
Just thinking about that makes me want to cry.
All right, so exciting stuff, and some really cool concept art has been released that will get those Star Wars fans really, really, really excited. So Kylie's going to talk about that.
Yes, the concept art for the cabins, which is what they're calling the rooms inside the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser, was released. Obviously, this is a hotel. It doesn't move, but it is supposed to resemble a cruise ship, like a space cruise ship, so they're calling the rooms cabins to be on theme with that. The cabins right now show a queen bed and two bunk bed pods that are kind of built into the wall and padded all the way around. They look super fun. I can imagine any kid would be in heaven with the bunk beds.
Or me.
Or Emma. The color scheme for the rooms is orange, black, white, and gray, so very space-themed. When you first walk into the room, you're going to see open shelves and a safe as well as a mini fridge in the entryway. And then the entry door is built to look like an airlock type door that you would see on an actual spaceship. So that's a cool bit of theming there. One of my favorite things about the room from what we can see right now is the TV is actually built into the wall. So it's not mounted. It looks like a picture hanging on the wall or something.
Yeah.
Or like painted on even, which is really cool. It gives it a really futuristic look. And then from the picture, it looks like there's some type of pullout storage or something underneath the TV, but I'm not exactly sure. There were handles in the wall, but not sure what those pull out to be. On the far wall of the room is a spaceship-looking window that gives you views of space that are supposed to change as you progress through your journey on the Star Cruiser. So you should have different views throughout your entire trip. And then under the window, you'll find a small table that pulls out from the wall and stools to sit on for that. The pictures that were released are for the regular-sized rooms, but there will also be larger captain's quarters rooms that give a little bit more space because these rooms are pretty tight. And then no pictures were released for the bathrooms. So we will see what those will look like. We don't know yet. But yeah. Exciting to see a glimpse. That is supposed to start opening for reservations later this year. And then hopefully in 2021 will be the first stay.
I want to do that. I want to go there. The art looks so cool. And I really like this one picture on there that has a man and his son, and they're standing in a weird way. I just think it's really funny. But yeah, the art looks amazing, and I can't wait to see what that's like.
Yeah, this is definitely a priority for Disney. They're pretty confident that this is going to be successful, and they've been really pushing ahead with construction on this place. So that has not really, the pandemic hasn't really slowed this one down. Like, this is going ahead full steam. They're confident that before the end of 2021, this will be operational. I don't know. I'm kind of excited. This isn't like on the top of my list of things to do. But for people who are really into Star Wars or want to experience like this type of immersive new type of idea Disney is doing, I think it'll be really fun. you should definitely think about it as a cruise.
Yes.
Like, it's very stateroom vibes, mm-hmm. you know, they're calling them cabins. You basically, your window, you don't get to see actually outside. It's basically one of those magical portholes, you know, yeah. that's yeah. kind of like another television screen almost. Yeah, it's just everything is designed kind of like how a cruise would be. You get like a day excursion into Galaxy's Edge. So I'm just curious about what the pricing will be, because I think the pricing will be also in line with Disney Cruise Line.
Yeah.
So that could mean you might be looking at maybe over $1,000 for per night, or, you know, for this two-day, two-night experience is what it is for now.
I'm interested to see, because, I mean, you're paying that big ticket number for a Disney cruise because everything is included, including, like, your food on Castaway Cay. Like, everything on Castaway, well, I shouldn't say everything, but a lot of the things on Castaway Cay are included in your price because it's Disney's private island. And I'm wondering, when you take that excursion to Galaxy's Edge, will you have things that are included as well?
Yeah, I feel like it should be. And I feel like you should be given in some way like the VIP tour experience.
Yeah.
Still, we're just speculating about the price at this point. But if you are going to be, you know, paying a couple $1,000s for one of these like cabins, then it would be nice to not have to worry about, am I actually going to get on Rise of the Resistance? Yeah. Do I still have to try to get in a boarding group?
Yeah.
Like, that should be automatic for those guests.
You all know? Get to build a lightsaber. That'd be so cool.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah, that would be just awesome. One of those extra great perks. Or even just perks.
Like, pick between a droid and a lightsaber, like which one you want to do.
So yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. So we will keep you updated as more details are released about that. And a very beautiful, beautiful castle has been refurbished, not in America, in one of the international parks, and Emma's going to give us some details about that.
So the Castle of Magical Dreams is now open at Hong Kong Disneyland. After about 3 years of work, this castle is now complete, and it's the first Disney castle to ever be reimagined. Definitely look up pictures of this because it's absolutely beautiful. Each tower on the castle represents a different princess or queen, and there are 13 of them. There are a lot of descriptions of each tower, and they're absolutely awesome. So, just a couple. Anna and Elsa's tower includes a light blue shingled roof, which is reminiscent of Elsa's icy blue dress. And there's the shimmering silver finial on the tower, and it is a three-dimensional snowflake. Ariel's tower is coral and green, and the dome features scallop details with a pearly luster and gold highlights. A golden seashell supported by kelp and pearls is this tower's finial. And then I'll just describe one more. Aurora's tower reaches higher than the other castle towers, and the finial is a shimmering golden crown.
And we believe the finial is like the tree topper, yes. like thing on top of the...
There, like at the top of the tower, there's the spire, which is the little pointy thing. And then the finial is
the little ornament.
Yeah. So then Aurora's tower matches her iconic dress colors, which magically transform from pink to blue.
So one thing that's interesting about this, I think Cinderella Castle just flows off the tongue really easily, and everyone like, oh, look, it's Cinderella Castle. But are people really going to like walk into the park and say, look, it's the Castle of Magical Dreams? Like,
yeah, it's a little long.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's too long to remember. I keep forgetting the name of it. Like, even just now, I was like, is that the name of it?
People will probably just refer to it as the castle.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it is so epic. They did such a nice job.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't care what the name is.
And all the different, like, spires and towers, they really kind of blend and mesh together very well.
Right. You'd think that this concept would be really hard to, like, make...
Like, tacky.
Yeah, and it'd be really hard to make it look cohesive, but it really... Definitely look up pictures, because it really does look like...
We'll have to post on Instagram and stuff, yeah, some pictures sure. of it. Yeah, it's great. And before we head off into our topic for today, I wanted to give our listeners an update. If you listened to our last episode, you heard Emma and I discuss Disney's decision to lay off 90% of their Equity Entertainment cast members. We know that the financial situation for Disney has been absolutely dismal this year, but for a variety of reasons that we discussed a couple weeks ago, this decision did not sit well with most hardcore fans. Most of the time, when decisions like this are made, we feel absolutely powerless to do anything about it, but this time around, we've seen the benefits of collective action. Thousands and thousands of fans from all over the world got on social media, made phone calls, sent emails expressing their disappointment, and Josh D'Amaro responded at the IAPA conference, which is organized by the Global Association for the Attractions Industry. He made a keynote speech there, and D'Amaro said that Disney has received the message loud and clear, and that they, quote, plan on bringing back entertainment that they recently had to discontinue indefinitely, end quote.
Woohoo!
Yeah, it's really encouraging to hear that a Disney executive made a commitment like that. Usually, you have to kind of take everything that Disney execs say with a big grain of salt, but I trust Josh D'Amaro's word, and even in the midst of everything that's happened, like, his reputation is still intact, and his cast members still think really positively of him. Like, this is the guy that went... and personally, basically had an apology tour after that decision was released and 28,000 people were laid off. He was, again, committed to going, like, down in the trenches and talking with people, saying how sorry he was. So I think that he understands what gives the resort a little extra touch of magic. And I know that in the grand scheme of things, like, our show is just a really little drop in the bucket in terms of, like, Disney fans overall. But it's comforting to know that so many shows and vlogs and people on social media, like, spoke out against this, and that certain executives in the Disney company still care about what those hardcore fans think. Yeah. And they're not going to just make a decision and just expect everybody to be okay with it if it's a really kind of unfortunate decision. I just wanted to share that good news around this time of the holidays. It's great to hear positive things happening. And Kylie, since you didn't get to mention anything, you weren't part of the episode last time, I just wanted to ask if you had any thoughts about when you heard that really, really sad news.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I was devastated to hear that. I mean, some of my favorite Disney memories are watching the shows, and I think that's something that really sets Disney World apart from the other theme parks in the world, is that you can go and see high quality musical entertainment, and there's things to do that aren't just roller coasters. And I think because Disney is all about storytelling, and that's kind of where everything started, movies and shows, and it's needs to be an essential part of the park, because you need to tell those stories. And I think that was devastating for me to hear. But yes, definitely very excited at the potential of the shows returning sooner rather than later. Going in June without our favorite shows would be really sad for
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very devastating. So,
well, and it's like Disney's providing us with a service ultimately, and like I think that they're probably realizing that this really would affect people's experience at the parks and whether or not they're going to want to pay all the money that they're paying to go. So I think they realized how big of a mistake that was.
Yeah, exactly. So today we're hopping back into our overviews of the deluxe resorts, continuing in alphabetical order. So the Grand Floridian Resort is up today. Stay with us. That topic is coming right up. Time to talk about Disney's flagship resort, the Grand Floridian. It must be unquestionably the greatest resort at Disney World, right? We'll see. This resort gets a ton of hype, and it's not just like us being like salty about this resort. Like, the hype it gets comes from the Walt Disney Company itself. So they hype this place up. And it's consistently marketed as, like, the gold standard of resorts. The Grand Floridian opened on June 28th, 1988, with a main building, four other lodging buildings, and a total of 867 rooms. In 2013, a DVC section was added onto the resort, which contains an additional 147 rooms. This resort is all about elegance and modern convenience. It's located on the monorail line, very close to Magic Kingdom. The architectural style is Victorian, and the property contains gorgeous verandas, white-framed buildings, intricate lattice work, dormers, and turrets beneath a red shingled roof. In my mind, there is no question that the Grand Floridian has one of the most beautiful exteriors of any Disney resort. Would you guys agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's really pretty.
Yeah, and any time you get like an in-person sighting of this resort, it's pretty stunning. The grounds are expertly manicured. Everything about the gardens, landscaping, and lawns is just thoughtful and exquisite. The main lobby is also breathtaking. It's a five-story atrium that contains chandeliers, an aviary, a grand piano, a cage elevator, sections with Italian marble floors, and it's all topped by stained glass domes. On the second floor, you can find dining, a lounge, and shopping that looks a lot more like high-end boutique shopping than your average gift shop. Transportation is another strong aspect of this resort. Bus service is available to Hollywood Studios, Animal Kingdom, Disney Springs, and the water parks. You can hop on the monorail to get to Epcot, the Polynesian, or Magic Kingdom, and ferry boat transportation is available to get you to the Poly or Magic Kingdom. Lastly, and this is a new development, it's been in the works now for over a year, guests can take advantage of a brand new walkway that goes around Seven Seas Lagoon if you would like to walk to Magic Kingdom. I've heard that it takes about 15 minutes, so now the contemporary can no longer say that it's the only resort that is within walking distance to Magic Kingdom. I actually think that's a really good thing, like the main monorail line resorts all having like a path to get to the Magic Kingdom, that just makes sense. And people had been basically asking for this for many, many years, and Disney finally listened.
It's also a nice update too with the current climate, because people are probably going to feel much more comfortable walking to the park than riding in a monorail with a bunch of other people in an enclosed space.
Yeah.
So that's good timing.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. If you're a longtime listener, you might be confused because you've heard me say some really unkind things about this resort in the past, but everything that I've mentioned so far seems to be really positive. Well, we haven't gotten to the dining, the rooms, or pricing. So sometimes, like the old saying goes, beauty is only skin deep. And in my opinion, that's certainly the case with the Grand Floridian. Everything looks extremely nice and polished on the outside, but after you get through that kind of surface, there's not a whole lot of value there.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll try to be fair, though, and I mean, just provide you with our honest opinions. So Emma's going to start talking to us about the dining, pool, shopping, and other entertainment at the resort.
Okay, so starting off with Narcoozies, They serve American seafood, and it's a fine and signature dining experience. It's on the waterfront, and they are open for dinner. The Grand Floridian Cafe is American food, casual dining, open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The Enchanted Rose is a bar service and also like American food. It's a lounge inspired by Beauty and the Beast. Gasparilla Island Grill, American food. They do mobile orders and it's a quick service restaurant. And they are open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Beaches Pool Bar and Grill, open for lunch. And it's a bar service, American cuisine, and a quick service eating experience. And it is a gazebo bar by the sandy beach and zero entry pool. The Courtyard Pool Bar is a bar service by the largest pool at the resort, and they have American food, and it's a quick service. 1900 Park Fair, American food, it's a buffet and character dining experience. They have breakfast and dinner buffets and a tea party, and those are each hosted by Disney characters.
We have experienced that character dining before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Our experience wasn't that positive.
No.
There was an issue with our reservation. It wasn't handled very well. It was kind of inconvenient. We had to wait for a while. And then once you get in there, I mean, you walk in, like, we were pretty much in awe walking around the Grand Floridian. That might have been, like, our first time hanging out there. And
for an extended period of time, yeah.
Yeah. So we had just come, like, from touring the grounds and the lobby and everything. And we get to this place, and we're expecting a pretty high-end, like, character dining experience. But honestly, the interior of that restaurant is so underwhelming.
It looked like a banquet hall.
Yeah,
but felt very, not a good like cafeteria-esque.
Yeah,
kind of.
There was no ambiance, and I mean the characters themselves that we met, that was cool, but the food
reminded me of Chef Mickey's.
Yeah, it was very basic,
not original at all.
And then I mean we got to meet Mary Poppins, right?
It was like, Mary Poppins. I think Winnie the Pooh and Tigger were there too, and then maybe. Yeah. The fairy godmother. It was kind of a hodgepodge of characters.
Such a weird
it was a bunch of like they do like English characters. So Mary Poppins, they kind of rotate. So I know Alice is there sometimes.
Yeah,
I don't think we met Alice.
I think we saw Alice, but like it wasn't during our meal.
Yeah. So anyway, but some of the other ones we've covered so far, the dining here just has sort of a slightly above average reputation. Like Narcoozy, some people like a lot, but it doesn't get a whole lot of buzz. It's all right. Grand Floridian Cafe is nothing to speak of. That's kind of their grab and go situation. The Enchanted Rose Lounge is way overpriced and not great. Gasparilla Island Grill, nothing too much to speak of. That's like the quick service food court situation. And anything else? Yeah, 1900 Park Fair, we already mentioned. Overpriced and not good. So let's continue, Emma.
All right. Moving right along to Citricose. It's American cuisine inspired by Mediterranean food. And it's a fine signature dining experience. And then there's Citricose Lounge, and it's the bar lounge associated with Citricose. The Garden View Tea Room is a British unique themed dining, and there's morning and afternoon tea overlooking the gardens and pool. Victoria and Albert's serves American food in its fine signature dining. At this restaurant, classic Victorian elegance meets American cuisine, and they have been the AAA Five Diamond Award recipient since 2000. Hmm. Victoria and Albert's Chef Table Dinner is pretty epic. Located in the heart of Victoria and Albert's kitchen, a 10-course tasting menu inspired by the season. The experience is about 3 hours long. There's one party per evening. Guests must be 10 or above, and there's a dress code. Men must wear dinner jackets with dress pants or slacks and shoes. Ties are optional, and house dinner jackets are available to borrow. And women may wear a cocktail dress or other nice dress, a pantsuit, or a skirt and blouse. And then, of course, there's the Disney Resort's room service.
Yeah, Victoria and Albert's is like a place unlike any other, really, at Disney. This is fine dining, like an artistic experience. And some other places have like a multi-course tasting menu, but this is kind of on the next level. It's the only AAA Five Diamond restaurant in the Orlando area. And you're insane if you're bringing a kid here. Yes, 10, like no one below the age of 18 should come here. This is like one of those once-in-a-lifetime dining experiences. Anything you do here is going to be 3 hours. The regular table service here, there are only 8 tables in the restaurant, and it still takes nearly 3 hours. But usually it's 7 courses. If you do the chef's table, you can mingle with the chefs, walk around the kitchen. That extends it, like Emma said, by a couple courses. The pricing is $185 per person, or $250 per person if you want to do the wine pairing. That doesn't include the tax and gratuity. So this is, you know, you can't really compare this to any other restaurant on property. It's unquestionably pretty amazing, but very prohibitive in terms of price.
Yeah.
So... all right, let's move on to pools.
Okay, so first we have the beach pool, and it's a 111,261-gallon pool overlooking the Seven Seas Lagoon. It's a natural springs theme with cascading waterfalls and a zero-depth entry, and there is a 181-foot-long water slide as well as an adjacent splash area for kids. And the second pool is the courtyard pool. It's a zero-entry leisure pool located behind the main building, and there's a maximum depth of nearly 5 feet. And that's really it.
Yeah, pool, slightly above average, I'd say. It has beautiful-looking waterfalls that do look pretty natural. The water slide's pretty cool. Pool itself isn't that great. Yeah, there's not, like, a whole lot to say. It doesn't come close to being one of the coolest pools on property, mm-hmm. So.
Okay, moving on to shopping. There are some cool shops here. First, there's Basin White, and that is part of a small chain of bath and spa products found on Disney properties on both coasts. This location is a premium outlet, which means the products are made with higher quality ingredients, and some of the products can't be found anywhere else. Next, we have Commander Porter's, and they have upscale clothing with name brands such as Ralph Lauren and more, and they also sell cigars. Summer Lace is a women's boutique selling primarily pricey name brand clothing and accessories, but some more affordable Grand Floridian logo merchandise as well as hair accessories. Then there's M Mouse Mercantile. They sell all things Mickey, including apparel, toys, jewelry, and more, as well as pin trading and princess wear. Then we have the classic Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, where little kids can become princesses or knights. Then the Sandy Cove Gifts and Sundries, hotel logo souvenirs, sundries, snacks, H2O products, postcards, luggage, and even strollers. And lastly, the Curiouser Clothiers sell Disney-inspired designer clothing, premium souvenirs, and character merchandise.
You'll definitely feel like you're shopping at, like, boutique, I don't know, like downtown yeah. boutique somewhere here. It's not your typical gift shop experience.
Yeah, the shopping, in my opinion, is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are trade-offs. Like, there are a lot of things that you could buy at this resort that you'll never find at any other place, mm-hmm. which is nice. But also the selection is more limited because these are smaller shops and the prices, you know, are much higher.
Way higher.
So, you know, there are those trade-offs, but it is kind of really cool. And that's all kind of by that, like, lobby area. Visit the lobby and yeah, you'll have a great time walking around.
Up to the second floor. Yeah. All right. And other entertainment. You can rent poolside cabanas. There are motorized boat rentals, specialty cruises, movies under the stars, the Arcadia Games, basketball courts, jogging, and Grand Floridian campfire activities. So pretty much the basic stuff that's at all the deluxe resorts, plus boat rentals and specialty cruises.
So. Just the pairing of Grand Floridian and camping or campfire makes me laugh a little bit. We're going to go to the campfire at the Grand Floridian.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they should have, like, outdoor wood-burning stoves or something more fancy than a campfire.
I feel like they're, like, different vibes at the Grand Floridian. Like, you know, it's like a Victorian style theme, but then it's also like a beach theme. And I guess it goes well together. I just personally don't get it.
Yeah, moving on to rooms and some pricing. Kylie's gonna take us through that.
So the Grand Floridian is a DVC resort, so we'll start with the non-DVC rooms. They have outer buildings as well as the main building. And in the outer buildings, you can find Lagoon View standard rooms, Theme Park View standard rooms, and Garden View standard rooms, as well as one-bedroom suites and two-bedroom suites. And then in the main building, you can find Theme Park Views and standard views, as well as some king rooms. So the standard rooms have two queen-size beds and a day bed, or one king-size bed and a double-size sleeper sofa. The rooms have gray carpet and beige walls, and the beds have tufted headboards with white linens and orange accents. It's very neutral. Very neutral, which for me, I'm not a huge fan of. There are also like sconces all over the walls. I don't know if you guys have seen these standard rooms, but
I have.
They're on each side of both of the beds and then on each side of like the mirror over the desk. And like there's sconces all over the place, which mm-hmm. I think was interesting.
But, I like the headboard, but
yeah. what I don't really like is they kind of used lighting instead of artwork. So there's, like, virtually no artwork in these rooms.
Yeah, there's one, like, framed thing of, like, swans on the lagoon and then, like, the Grand Floridian or something in the background. But, yeah, there's not a whole lot of artwork.
Yeah.
I feel like the rooms are just biting into a really stale piece of bread.
Yeah. There are very nice large windows, and some of the rooms have balconies, which is a perk. There's also a large dresser for storage, as well as a desk and a chair. And then the beige continues in the bathroom. There's beige floral wallpaper and beige countertops. And the sink is a double vanity, which is a bonus. The toilet and shower are in separate rooms. So there's a door separating those sections of the bathroom for families that are traveling.
I have a huge problem with these bathrooms. And it's mostly the fact that the shower is still a tub.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Like, the shower is still a tub at the Grand Floridian.
What's the shower curtain?
I think beige? It's a glass door. It's a one of those glass door tubs, I think. Let me double check.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Because this is not the case in the DVC rooms.
No,
which
it's
I
not.
Will not be as critical on because they're really nice and they're much newer. But the ones in the main hotel side, which if you're going to book are so much more expensive, they're not as nice. It's ridiculous. Like, you don't even have like a cool, huge standing shower with like a rainfall shower head or anything like that. You still have this like white tub that you find anywhere, like in the value resorts.
Moving on to the suites. This is kind of unique. I think this is the only rooms that I know of at Disney that have pitched ceilings, which...
Yeah, it's really cool because it's not necessarily just the suites. It's anytime you stay on the top floor of one of the buildings.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. The color schemes in this room are green, red, and beige, which feels very Christmas to me. Probably my biggest complaint with these rooms is that it felt like Grandma's Christmas cottage.
Christmas on the beach.
These rooms have wallpaper and carpet as well, which kind of just adds to like the dollhouse vibe that I was getting. The furniture is more ornate with some intricate woodworking, which is nice in the furniture. It just looks a little more high end. The main room has a double-sized sleeper sofa, two chairs, a coffee table, and then a like dining table with four chairs, a dresser, and a TV. And then the bedroom has two queen beds, a dresser and a TV, a lounge chair, and a additional dresser and chair. And then the two bedroom is the same as the one, except the second bedroom has a king bed. Yeah, these rooms are kind of underwhelming to me for the price that you're going to pay for them. They just are in desperate need of an update.
Yeah, let's just move on because... until we say anything about pricing, it's hard to put all of this into context.
Yeah. Going on to the DVC side, there are Standard View and Lake View studio rooms, as well as one-bedroom villas, two-bedroom villas, and three-bedroom grand villas. The standard rooms have a queen bed, a queen-size sleeper sofa, and a single pull-down bed with Dumbo artwork on the inside that is actually really cute. I like the artwork in there. The rooms have carpet, but no wallpaper. They're painted, so they feel a little more up-to-date. And the rooms are almost all beige with a couple pops of blue, so they're starting to add some color in there, which I like. They have a dresser, a table, and two chairs, and then a kitchenette as well, because this is the DVC side. You get those extra amenities. The bathroom is split just like the other side, so the toilet and the shower are separate. However, these vanities just have a single sink, so beware of that. And then these rooms also have a porch or balcony, so you have some outdoor space. As Austin said, these rooms feel more up-to-date, especially in the bathrooms.
Yeah, much better bathrooms, and even the artwork is better. There's some really classy-looking, like, Mickey and Minnie Mouse silhouettes that are just in black, and they're, you can tell they're wearing kind of Victorian clothing. So those are really nice.
The one bedroom villa has a full kitchen with a large kitchen table. The living room has a queen size sleeper sofa, two lounge chairs, and a single pull down bed. The main space has wood floors, so that is awesome. However, the bedroom is still carpeted. This bedroom has a king-size bed, a dresser, a desk and a chair, and a lounge chair. These rooms only have one bathroom, so that's a little different than most one-bedroom villas. But the toilet section of the bathroom has two doors, so it connects to the bedroom as well as the main room, so that is a bonus if you choose to stay here. And then the shower and sink is in a separate area. I love the kitchen design in these rooms. I think the kitchen
is so beautiful.
It's really pretty. It just feels light and bright, which is what the outside of the Grand Floridian is. So it feels it makes more sense and it feels more luxurious. The two-bedroom villa is a one-bedroom villa combined with a studio. So nothing super different there. And like I said, the kitchen is beautiful, and I really love the bathrooms in these rooms. I still wish they would update some of the furniture. I think that's a problem throughout Disney resorts, which we've talked about.
Furniture's better than the regular rooms, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, still could use some improving. The one thing I think is kind of strange is that they have this underbed storage that's actually like pull-out drawers. But one of the huge pull-out drawers is, like, blocked by the wardrobe. Like, you can't open it. So it's kind of weird.
Gosh. And then lastly, the 3-bedroom villa is crazy as always. But honestly, if you're going to stay at the Grand Floridian and money is not an issue, stay in this room because this is like, it's gorgeous. They have a really cute foyer entry space with wallpaper that's like, actually, I really like. It's like pretty floral wallpaper. They have it's an awesome tray ceiling all throughout the main area that has like a really cool, it's not just your normal tray ceiling. It's like a really unique design. I love that just little design detail. There's a massive dining room and kitchen, 3 bedrooms, obviously, with tufted headboards that are super pretty, light and bright furniture all throughout the villa. And each bedroom has its own bathroom. And then there's an additional 4th bathroom that is like a guest bathroom, I guess. A guest bathroom in your hotel room.
Yeah.
And something that is awesome is in some of these bathrooms, they have TVs on the bathroom mirrors. So in case you need to just...
Yeah, that's not just exclusive to the Grand Villa. They have that in the other villas too. But that's a really so cool touch. Yeah.
There's also a massive game room in the villa with a huge sectional that also has a section that pulls out into a queen bed. And then the master bedroom is also stunning with like a huge king bed. So yeah, this is a room to check out. And this is my favorite room at the Grand Floridian easily.
Oh, for sure.
It should be.
I
mean,
yeah. I'm not going to lie. When you get to the 1-bedroom and 2-bedroom villas, this is when I fall in love like with the design of the rooms.
Yeah.
I really like them. I think they're very elegant. It's what the Grand Floridian should be everywhere.
Yep.
And barely any of that elegance and like modern design and classy design is carried over into the standard hotel side, mm-hmm. which is so frustrating. That side just is feeling very dated. And the DVC side, per usual, they're doing it right.
Yeah. So let's talk about some pricing. On the non-DVC side, for a garden view standard room, at peak season, Christmas time, you're looking at $1,084 a night. The lowest you're going to find these rooms for is $719 a night, and the average is going to be around $861 a night. So we're talking crazy numbers here. This is like basically the garden view rooms are the cheapest rooms at this resort. So... just to give you some perspective. The theme park view rooms are going to be a little more expensive. Around Christmas time, they're going to be $1,415 a night. The lowest you'll find is going to be around $723 a night, and the average will be around $927 a night. The 1-bedroom suites around Christmas are going to take you to $2,854 a night. The lowest you'll find them for is $1,546 a night, and the average is going to be around $2,105 a night. Lastly, the 2-bedroom suites around Christmas time are going to be a whopping $4,155 a night. The lowest you'll find is $2,510 a night, and the average will be around $3,538 a night. So these are ridiculously expensive rooms.
Yeah. Absolutely the most expensive at Disney. This is the most expensive resort at Walt Disney World. And it's tough nowadays to find a room at the Grand Floridian under $800 a night. Yeah. It's like difficult to do that. $800 a night plus.
Like any room.
Up to 1,000 and more during the peak seasons.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So it's really a lot of money. To me, like this is where... we start to drag the Grand Floridian because in the standard hotel rooms, there's no way, in my opinion, you can argue that it's worth an extra $300+ a night over staying at a place like Animal Kingdom Lodge or Boardwalk or something like that.
Yeah.
Like the value's not there. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. Like the resort or not, I don't know how you can argue that it's a good value. It's way overpriced.
Yeah.
You don't get nearly as much as you're paying for. And in a place like this, if you're calling it like Disney's flagship resort, I don't care if you have to update the rooms every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to keep them looking more stunning than going off property and trying to stay at like the Waldorf Astoria or like the Four Seasons.
Yeah.
You know, that place offers you the luxury if that's what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Like Disney sometimes doesn't do a great job of offering true, legitimate luxury. They kind of coast on the idea of you're staying on property and we're giving the Disney theming. But that's like not what the Grand Floridian's trying to be. It's trying to be like the gold standard luxurious resort, and it does not achieve that beyond looking at the resort.
Mm-hmm. You said it all there. So going into who this resort is for, honestly, people who have this on their bucket list. Like, for a lot of people, like we've said, this is, as Disney markets it, their like flagship resort, the standard for what the resort should be. And for some people, that puts it on their bucket list. It's just like you want to stay at the Grand Floridian just because of the reputation that it apparently has. I think it's similar to Chef Mickey's in that way. You think of Disney, you think of Chef Mickey's, and you want to go eat at Chef Mickey's, even though that's not the best dining experience, but it's just like something that you think of when you think of Disney, so you want to do it, you want to experience it. So I think if it's on your bucket list, stay there. I mean, it's a beautiful, has beautiful grounds. I think there's definitely a market of people who just think, oh, it'd be cool one day to stay at the Grand Floridian. Also, people who have money to spare. If you're, I don't know, if you have the money and you want to splurge for one of the nicer rooms, like on the DVC side, rent points and like...
A family we saw on our last trip at the airport, you could tell by looking at them, they had money to spare, and they were decked out in all white, in all Grand Floridian embroidered clothing.
Yeah, so, I mean, it would be a fun experience if you could do the things like pay to eat at Victoria and Albert's and pay for all the fun boutique souvenirs and stuff. But if you're a family trying to go on a budget, you're not going to be able to experience the resort how you want. Like, you're not even going to be able to really buy much in the gift shops, and that's not necessarily a fun experience. So if you have money to spare, go for it. Also, older families, there's not a ton for little kids to do here. I would definitely not recommend staying here with young kids. And then people who want to be close to Magic Kingdom, obviously this is one of the three options. So it's good for those families as well.
The other problem I have with this resort is, in my opinion, it has the worst theme park rooms in terms of view, because the ones at the Poly and the Contemporary, if it's a theme park view room, you're not going to be straining and craning your neck over to see the actual castle. But some of these theme park view rooms, they basically kind of look at Space Mountain, and you might get a glimpse if you really look over at the castle. So that's a problem to me.
Especially with what you pay. Yeah. Like, going back to our pricing, a garden view room at Christmas is $400 cheaper than the theme park view room. So you're paying $400 a night for that view.
Yeah. And you want to like have part of that is having a clear view of the fireworks whenever they come back. Yeah. You know, you don't want to be necessarily like missing those if you paid that for the room. So yeah, there are just kind of a lot of problems with this resort for me in terms of the way it's priced. I would not be as mad. I'd actually probably be saying really great things about the resort itself if it were priced in like the Boardwalk in Animal Kingdom Lodge category. Mm-hmm. If you bring it down to that, I'm like, okay, that has a lot of value. Where it's priced at now, way above that stuff, and even above the Polynesian and above the Contemporary, there's just no value there.
No.
My recommendation is absolutely go, walk around and hang out there, but don't like pay that money to stay there.
Yeah,
I mean, the only room type that you can really say would be better than other resorts is probably the three-bedroom villa.
Yeah, I would say the villas in general.
So like,
but still.
And still just, in my opinion, still just the one or two bedroom villas with that full kitchen. Mm-hmm. Because the studio, the deluxe studio to me is good, but not necessarily better than other deluxe studios. Absolutely never pay for the regular hotel side. Yeah. If you want to stay here, consider looking at renting DVC points, or you can book those rooms directly through Disney too. And they're priced comparatively. They're like not more expensive than the regular hotel side. And that's definitely the better room category. Really quick for touring plans. Would you recommend this hotel to a friend? Oof. 67% of people who stayed here and responded to the survey said that they would recommend the Grand Floridian to a friend, and the Disney average is 76. So the flagship resort coming in below average in terms of recommendations. Would you stay at this hotel again? 92% said they would, which is the Disney average. So those scores are also kind of telling. And I know we try not to read too much into those because we don't have any information about sample size, but it kind of makes you think, okay, people understand that it's a beautiful place, but they're a little bit hesitant about telling a friend or family member, yeah, it was a good value. Spend your money here. Any parting words about the Grand Floridian besides
take
the fact...
Take pictures there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You'll get gorgeous pictures.
Take some pictures. I'm always happy when we hop over there and spend a couple hours walking around.
I love the lobby. The lobby's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's definitely been some value lost with the Grand Floridian Society Orchestra not playing anymore. That was an amazing live music experience.
And also fun around Christmas time. That's where they do those crazy gingerbread houses. They're not doing that this year, though, because of COVID.
Right.
But
when those come back, that's definitely something to see. Go to tour, think twice before you secure that reservation. So
think twice before you pay the price.
Very good. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Disney Daydream Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll join us for the next one. Remember, be kind to one another and take the time to find a magical moment in each and every day.